Hello, and welcome to the Rested With an Eye podcast, where we explore travel time rather than destinations and the joys and surprises of shared transport. For many, traveling on buses, boats, and trains is now a lifestyle choice. My name's Mark Selby. I love the theatre of travel, discovering the stories of journeys, and learning how people use their travel time. Alone together. If you want to feel happier, more engaged, and learn new things, try speaking with a stranger. The value of what are termed minimal social interactions can be extraordinary, opening our eyes to new perspectives, tackling feelings of social isolation, creating a sense of belonging. And travelling with strangers on the shared transport of buses, boats, trains, or planes offers ideal settings in which to engage. Now, the reluctance of commuters to interact with each other is not unique to England. More extreme examples of contact avoidance exist elsewhere. I'm a people spotter rather than a train or plane spotter. I don't wear the badges, but I do have a collection of Finnish bus and tram queue photographs. I know it does sound odd, but bear with me. It's easy for visitors to Finland to miss something that I've not seen elsewhere. When Finns stand in a queue at a bus or tram stop, they'll maintain a 1 meter or more distance between themselves and the next person queuing. Sometimes it feels as if a queue could stretch all the way to the next stop, whatever the weather. When social distancing was encouraged during the COVID pandemic, it was as if we were all becoming Finnish queuers. Told to stand 1 meter apart, some Finns joked, "Why do we have to stand so close?" Sadly, it appears the queuing behaviour of Finns today can be traced back to the spikes in mortality rates during the 1918 influenza epidemic. They triggered social distancing that seems to have lasted. In his book, The Power of Strangers, Joe Keyhoen looked at the taciturn nature of the Finns towards fellow travellers. He looked at the behavioural differences between Nordic and Latin American countries. His conclusions were surprising. In countries with high levels of corruption and unstable governments, he found the citizens were super social. This was despite the inherent dangers of mixing with strangers in countries with high levels of violent crime. People end up being more friendly because they need each other. They need to make connections with others to live in such unstable places. In Finland, people live in a very safe and stable culture. Finns don't talk to strangers because they don't need to. They don't need to rely on other citizens to live their lives. They can just rely on the state, resulting in an introverted culture. The reluctance of travellers to communicate in some cultures creates interesting challenges. For example, if you're an author or filmmaker, how do you initiate credible interactions between characters? What is the trigger for that first interaction between travellers, other than a murder or other unpleasant crime? In Brief Encounter, Noel Coward engineered the interaction by having the leading lady, Celia Johnson, get a speck of cinder in her eye from a train passing the platform. She goes to the station's tea room for water to remove it. An unknown doctor, played by Trevor Howard, helps remove the speck before leaving to catch his train. A week later, they bump into each other in the tea room, take a cup of tea, and discover they coincidentally visit that town each Thursday. Her for shopping and a matinee film, him to work at the local hospital. They then depart from different platforms to their respective family homes. Romance blossoms and painful decisions are made. 54 years after its premiere, The British Film Institute ranked the film as the second greatest British film of all time. It was second to The Third Man, and Lawrence of Arabia was third. Funnily enough, Trainspotting was 10th. As a teenager, I took the London Underground from Roding Valley Station to school. Each morning, I'd look across to the opposite platform, where a girl of my age took a train to her school. We'd exchange furtive glances, and I thought her so attractive. This continued for about a year. But like other English commuters, we never actually spoke to each other. Such a pity. Conversations between travelling strangers can be extraordinary. Perhaps it's the perceived security of anonymity. Once I took a flight from Geneva to Washington. A woman was sat next to me. The flight took off without us acknowledging each other. When the meal was served, bread rolls were offered. My neighbour was distracted, so I asked if she'd like bread. She accepted, and we ate in silence. The meal was surprisingly good, and I commented as such. She agreed, and we chatted about some of the less pleasant in-flight meals we'd suffered. The conversation continued. Occupations, where we were from, and other courteous inquiries, but never our names. The meals were cleared. Rather than reading or watching a film, we continued chatting, and a candid conversation unfurled. My neighbour was struggling with a relationship and considering her options. As the flight progressed, she described her dilemma in detail. Her partner was married, older, and didn't want children. She wanted the option to have children. Now, if this sounds in any way flirtatious, let me assure you it wasn't. It was the sharing of a problem with a trusted, anonymous listener. At the end of the flight, we said our farewells and never communicated again. The intimacy that can be shared with a trusted stranger is precious. As Susan from Terra Linda in California says, and I quote, "It's remarkable finding how easy it is to draw stories from strangers. You show interest. You ask a few leading questions. You genuinely listen. Not to immediately turn the conversation back to your own story. That, I found, is crucial. The urge to share our own stories is strong and must be resisted." End quote. My experience is not uncommon. Neelam in Singapore and others tell me of their similar experiences as an unknown but trusted confidant on journeys. I'm intrigued by the triggers for these interactions and the ways people determine trustworthiness in such a short space of time. Noel Coward used grit in an eye, hardly a common occurrence since the demise of steam trains. Today it's more likely to be a simple query such as, "Is this seat free?" Those prepared to take a little more risk might make a simple, inoffensive observation. "Goodness, it's cold today," or "This train's busy." The timing and the nature of the response is critical and indicates whether a conversation will start. If weather is the opening topic, the response that fosters a conversation in England will be agreement with the observation. Disagreement, such as, "Oh, it's not that cold," or belittling, such as, "It gets much colder where I live," will end the discussion almost before it begins. Weather figures prominently in British discussions. As someone observed, "Britain doesn't have a climate, it just has lots of weather." Both parties starting to engage will make rapid assessments of each other, and a dialogue might follow. Alternatively, if either person lacks interest in more, they can simply bring things to a close with polite body language, opening a book or checking their phone, and neither party is particularly offended. I just find the sight of strangers edging towards a conversation so interesting. If it takes off, anything could happen. Now, in the UK, interactions between passengers and bus drivers are remarkably polite, especially as passengers disembark. A recent survey indicated that bus drivers in Britain are the employees most thanked by their customers. I worked on autonomous or self-driving vehicle research for several years. We were particularly interested in self-driving cars, but the interest from bus and truck fleet owners was high. Almost half the cost of running a bus is the cost of the driver. The other half comprises vehicle depreciation, maintenance, fuel, etc. Some fleet operators sought to reduce their costs by replacing drivers with technology and improving the bottom line. Assuming you can earn the same passenger income, reducing costs by half should certainly improve profitability. The calculations were right, but the question was arguably wrong. Rather than measuring costs, they should have been measuring value. Replacing the arms, legs, and eyes of a human driver with technology missed the value of the driver. Beyond driving safely in all environments, this person is a search engine, answering the queries of travellers, "How do I get to wherever?" A visible security guard monitoring passenger behaviour and raising alarms when necessary. And as an assistant for the vulnerable, the elderly, and those with young children in buggies, etc. No wonder drivers are the most thanked employees. The research on autonomous vehicles was interesting. There are certain controlled environments where self-driving vehicles make sense, such as ports or warehouses. But it soon became clear that much of the research was aiming for the wrong destination. It wasn't driverless cars that we needed, but rather carless drivers. And that requires different solutions. Until next time, enjoy your travels, and remember, strangers are just people you don't yet know. Thank you for listening to the Rested With an Eye podcast. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast service and share with a friend. I look forward to hearing from you and sharing your travel stories. Please email restedpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to everyone that has contributed to Rested With an Eye so far. Enjoy your travel time.